Today is Wednesday. It's September 7th, 2022, and it's 2:37 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast, which is broadcast most Saturday nights at 8 o'clock on WGN Radio. Listen for me weekdays there from 10 to 2.
Hey guys, Brandon Pope from On the Block on WCIU, powered by Block Club Chicago.
I'm Heather Sharon of WTTW News.
I'm Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, and I am not running for mayor.
I was going to use that line. No, I was going to put that I am not going to run for city council, because that's what all the cool kids are doing now. Incidentally, Eric, before we get rolling on this, before we do this version of the Mincing Rascals podcast, we record a video pre-roll of us kibitzing before the podcast runs. And then do you post that on the Picayune Sentinel? Have you been posting that there?
I do, and I also usually post it in social media, too.
So if you want to hear Heather's amazing thoughts about the industrial celebration complex.
Wedding industrial complex. And
the 2 weeks on the eve of Austin's wedding. You'll want to search out that video because it's enlightening and horrifying. And I didn't think it was very nice to Austin, by the way. Austin, we wish you nothing but the best.
There's a real chance that Heather will show up at the chapel, like in the scene from the graduate, pound on the door, saying, "This is a tool of the patriarchy."
All the security will have a picture of Heather in their pocket.
I assume most venues do have a picture of me on hand.
Like that hasn't already been done. All right. I don't want to make this podcast today a sports cast, but we do have two kind of sporting stories today. In a bit, we'll visit with Shakia Taylor from the Chicago Tribune, who covers the Sky. Our city's best team is our least known. More about that in a minute. Our best known team has actually been one of our worst lately, or at least the most frustrating. The Bears have released a rough rendition of what their new stadium complex in Arlington Heights would be like. State Representative Cam Buckner, candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago, is the lawmaker in whose district Soldier Field currently sits and is currently urging lawmakers to make a law that would prohibit even local tax dollars from aiding the team. We looked up some of the numbers on the Bears. They are, what was it, Pete, the fifth most valuable NFL franchise and the 18th most valuable sporting franchise in the world. The Bears say their project would create 48,000 jobs and $9.4 billion in economic impact for Chicagoland. I think it's penny wise and pound foolish to say that no tax dollars can go to a company or a municipality to help a company. What do you say?
Well, in general, I think that's true. I think that you do need to invest when you're a civic institution, when you're going to grow a city. You're going to have to put some money forward for infrastructure. You're going to have to help out businesses, because if you don't, then a neighboring town is going to do it. This particular instance is a little different because the Bears aren't choosing between a number of different possible venues. They've got either stay at Soldier Field or they moved to Arlington Heights. So it's not like Arlington Heights has to offer them a particularly sweet deal. But in general, I think that this kind of investment, upfront infrastructural investment and so on, is good for a community. And I don't really like this movement to say absolutely no to all of it.
I think you're always going to have a bad appetite from the general public when it comes to taxes going toward any sporting venue, not just in Chicago. I think you look across the board, it's a wildly unpopular thing across all kinds of cities. Cleveland is looking at upgrading their stadium and they want public dollars, and people are like, no, just stick with what you got. Why would we do that? So the appetite isn't there, but you look at the benefits that this is possibly going to bring to Arlington. I noticed that they're saying they don't want public funding for the stadium itself. What they want is for the entertainment district and all the stuff they're bringing around it, with the retail, restaurants, fitness center, a lot of stuff that seems excessive. Their goal is going to have to be getting people to buy into that. And buy into what the benefits of that would be to that area. Who all is going to be able to benefit from the fitness center there, the office spaces there, the retail there? If the public can't really all the way benefit from it, then why should the collective public's dollars go towards it? I'm sure it's going to be a big part of the discussion.
One thing about Arlington Heights that makes this especially interesting is they have this very unique and arcane part of their city code that allows for these citizen-initiated referenda in their municipality. And that's not common in Illinois, but it's happening in Arlington Heights. So you have folks there who have collected enough signatures to, I believe last night was when they first submitted that proposed ordinance to bar any public funding from going not only to this deal, but any deals, private deals in Arlington Heights. And so they needed, I think, 500 some signatures to put it in front of the city council. And I think they got 600. So that's in front of the council now. If they reject it, then those organizers can go back and get signatures equal to, I think it's 12%, 10 or 12% of the city's voting population. So you could have this really interesting dynamic where folks rise up and say, we're not going to, not only are we going to tell our elected officials we don't want this, we are going to ourselves pass a hardened law in our town that prevents any public money from going to this. And that's, I think, a good thing that people rise up and do that. And guess what? If it doesn't work out or there's bad consequences to that, you can pass another ordinance to change it. But I think people look at a town like a Bridgeview, where there's 15,000 people in that town of Bridgeview, and the municipality has over half a billion dollars in debt from the stadium deal there. And it's a total dog. And if they had had a protection like this, there's no way that would have happened.
That's the fire stadium you're talking about.
That's right.
The measure that was presented to the Arlington Heights board yesterday was not some grassroots expression of anti-sports stadium-ness. This was created and funded by a political group that's funded by the Koch brothers and a few who have funded Republican candidates and Republican issue groups. It's not clear to me, or I think to anybody, whether this is actually reflective of how people in Arlington Heights feel. This would also not prevent Arlington Heights from subsidizing the development around the stadium. And that, as I understand it, is what the Bears are asking for. So it's very, very common for developers to ask, like just with like Lincoln Inn Yards and other developments, to say, hey, we need help paying for the infrastructure. So this development will need new roads, new traffic lights, new utilities. And that would be typically the responsibility of whatever developer would come in and say, I want to build X, Y, or Z. I can't imagine a political world where they could get anything through the General Assembly to directly subsidize a stadium, but it's not unusual for a development of this size, which would be one of the largest in the state's history, to have some form of state or local subsidy.
Well, you're getting to the next question I was going to ask. What Cam Buckner's talking about, he made it sound like they want to have a law that says you can't support either this project per se or stadium projects like it. What's the appetite in the legislature for that?
It's very unlikely that they would tie their hands to helping out stuff like this, right? That's the very famous deal that was made to keep the White Sox in Chicago, right? That was a classic Madigan shenanigan move. They want to be able to hold stuff like this over especially very wealthy developers. They want as much power as possible, even if they're going to end up rejecting it. They want to extract every ounce of political capital they can from people.
I want to underscore Heather's point about this not being a grassroots effort. It's not, these are not like a bunch of citizens in Arlington Heights getting up on their hind legs. It's funded by
Americans for Prosperity. And it's particularly a guy named Brian Costin, who I think everybody on this panel would love, is going around knocking on people's doors, getting petition signatures. It also shouldn't be made to seem like there's a shadowy force like descending on Arlington Heights with thousands of robots getting people's signatures. I mean, there's a poll of folks there that I think they were asked directly. The question is, do you approve or disapprove the Village of Arlington Heights giving taxpayer dollars to the Chicago Bears to help build their stadium? 21% approve, 68% disapprove.
Yeah, I think that's basically a push poll, though, right?
Because
Bears, again, are not asking for money to build the stadium. They're saying, we want to build restaurants and a hotel and a resort. I am hard-pressed to think of a major development, the Chicago casino potentially being the one exception to the rule, that doesn't get some form of subsidy. So Lincoln Yards is going to get it. The 78 is going to get it. Michael Reese is going to get it. The Bears are not reinventing the wheel here. And I think that it's disingenuous to suggest that this should not be treated like any other development proposal.
I don't think the argument is that it should be treated necessarily way different than other development proposals. But I think the idea is Now, of course, there's going to need to be, for instance, like probably need some wider streets in this area in Arlington Heights if we're going to have a huge stadium where tens of thousands of people are coming in, right? But there's also, to broadly define costs associated with a development, that could be tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer funding that could be funded by this massively wealthy entity. And I think that's the rub here, is how much of that should be funded by Illinois and local taxpayers, and how much should be funded by a massively wealthy entity that will privately gain billions of dollars from doing that.
Indeed.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if you're against this development, you have been against every development in Illinois and Chicago in its modern history, because this is how it's done.
And it also, I think it is important to say, and I'm not saying that the people who are going around pushing for this referendum in Arlington Heights or this change in Arlington Heights are shadowy. I'm just saying that they have an ulterior agenda here. They want this to be government policy everywhere. They don't want government involved in this kind of stuff at all, anywhere. And this looks like a good wedge for them. So I don't think it's like it is sincerely based on an uprising in Arlington Heights. And also Heather's description of this as a push poll, I think when you just ask that question pretty plainly, you don't talk about what the projected economic benefits are, if you don't ask people to really look at that issue more broadly, then you're going to get exactly that result. So I would be a little cautious about what the enthusiasm will be if the voters of Arlington Heights have to actually vote on this and they're asked to weigh a bunch of the different competing claims. It may just be that people in Arlington Heights don't want their lives to be upended by this enormous complex where the racetrack used to be. And then we think, you know, we like it out here. We moved out to the suburbs to get away from all this harem scarum. I'm dubious about what the actual sentiment is of the citizens of Arlington Heights. Hmm.
Especially since economists have argued for a long time against sports teams' projections that they give of these economic numbers. This idea that you're going to add this much amount of revenue ignores the idea that really, you're replacing, you know, one entertainment with another. Not exactly.
100%.
You know what I mean? So I think that's always going to be a thing there as well. You got to kind of look at those projections they're giving with a bit of skepticism, because where are they coming up with those numbers? So I think the legislators are going to want to kind of do their own review as well before they even consider giving any money.
It's a huge swindle. These sorts of deals are almost 100% of the time. The economic benefits that are projected are a huge swindle, especially for that reason, as Brandon cited, which is that they don't take into account a substitution effect. So like when, for a great example, where the Chicago Sky play, right? That's an arena that was built with these massive projections of attendance and economic benefit with no taking into account, hey, those people aren't going to UIC Pavilion for shows anymore. It competes with other stuff in the city, and this competes with other stuff in the state. So not only does it not account for that, it doesn't account for what else could this money have been used for and what would the effects of that have been. And that's
doesn't another this, way they gain. Doesn't that same question apply to like legalized gambling? That this money that people are going to be going and spending at the casinos or are already gambling through online apps, that's totally money that would have been going to movie theaters and restaurants and home appliances and cars and so on. So, I mean, I'm not sure how powerful an argument that is.
Well, that $9.4 billion was put forward by the Bears, so I think that tells you a little something about it. Of course, they would sugarcoat it as best they could. Mayor Lori Lightfoot said that the Bears have abandoned Chicago. That was her word. I asked my listeners, who do you think abandoned whom more? Did the Bears abandon Chicago, or did Chicago abandon the Bears? The point being that if we'd worked harder or smarter, we, Chicago, the mayor, to keep the team at the lakefront, maybe there would have been more of a chance that they would have stayed. But some people I've been talking to say there's no way they were going to stay. If they can go to Arlington Heights and they're going to build a stadium out there, they're going to go to Arlington Heights. Who abandoned whom more?
You could make the argument, you know, there were Forbes projections that if the Bears go to Arlington Heights, they'd be the most valuable franchise in the NFL just from moving. So in that sense, if you're the Bears, no matter what the city offers, you're probably going to be like, yeah, let's move, right? But on the other end there, Soldier Field has had its issues. It's been well documented. Even this preseason we've had, the field issues going on. The issues around the lakefront, it's just not aesthetically pleasing. It's a bore and a chore to try to get over there. So you could argue, okay, the mayor hasn't done enough to improve that. Past administrations haven't done enough to improve that. But in the end, when the Bears are looking at you know, how much revenue they can make and how much more lucrative a franchise they can be. And just moving from Chicago into Arlington Heights could improve that. They're probably going to leave regardless of what was going to be proposed, no matter what.
The original sin here was that, is it 2002, whenever that redesign of Soldier Field was, about 20 years ago? Mm-hmm. That's the original sin here. That was when the Bears made a mistake and the city made a mistake. They didn't make a dome. They built the smallest stadium in the NFL, or I don't know if it was at the time. It certainly is now. And efforts to fix that, to put a fake dome on top of it or whatever, however else they think they can address that problem, just aren't going to work. That you needed to, 20 years ago, think about a lot of the issues that the Bears seem to be thinking about right now. So did the Bears abandoning the city? I think the Bears abandoned common sense 20 years ago. they should have figured out a new place to move then, rather than go along with this redesign that was clearly at the time inadequate and has proven itself to be inadequate.
Let's stop right there. We got 4 minutes before Heather leaves. Let's talk about the city council. Why is everybody leaving the city council, Heather?
Part of it is that we're in the midst of, you know, the so-called great resignation. And I think the pandemic really made a lot of people reevaluate their life choices and decide whether this was something that they wanted to do. And I sort of put the aldermen who have announced that they're not running for re-election in a couple of different buckets. So you have people like Tom Tunney and Leslie Harrison and Howard Brookins, who have served for essentially somewhere around 20 years. And that's a long time to be doing the same job. And there's no doubt that their job is much different under Lori Lightfoot than it was under Rahm Emanuel or Mayor Daley. And I think they are just saying, you know what, it's time for what's next. Then there are people like Sue Sedlowski-Garza, who has only served 2 terms and has been affected by the pandemic, but also has had a hard time coping with the way that Mayor Lightfoot has approached the city council in her very sort of combative and divisive, and you're either with me or you're against me. And I think that's been really tough for some people to deal with. I also think that, you know, in the cliche is true, politics ain't beanbag. Each of these alder people were going to have to run for re-election again. It's a very different time. Nobody really knows sort of what, you know, sort of the mood of the Chicago electorate is going to be. There are a number of younger, sort of very left members of the city council who are looking to sort of expand their changes that they're making to city policy. And honestly, nobody knows who's going to be mayor in May of 2023. And I think that people are just tired, and there are easier ways to make between $120,000 and $140,000.
We're talking about a quarter of the city council almost here. So is this a referendum on Lori Lightfoot?
I think it's a little bit misleading. So right now there are 9 alder people who have said they're not going to run for re-election. 3 others have said that they want to run for mayor. So do I think that all 3 of those people are actually going to run for mayor and not run for re-election to the city council? Maybe, maybe not. So we don't know what the city, what sort of the final tally is going to be.
Do you know, are these aldermen who say they're running for mayor, they've got to have petitions in the field to run for re-election also. Do they? Right. Do you know?
You don't have to tell anybody if you're passing petitions. So if I'm smart and if I have enough volunteers or paid workers, I'm having everybody sign everything that I can.
All those circumstances notwithstanding, does this look like a referendum on Mayor Lori Lightfoot? I mean, it sure does seem like nobody wants to be in her sandbox.
I don't think that's incorrect. She's, you know, she's not somebody who is easy to work with. And I think she would be the first person to admit that. And she says part of that reason is because she is Black and a woman, and she's unwilling to sort of engage in the horse trading that other mayors have. Other people say that she's just not willing to give and take, and that makes politics, the art of politics, less fun. Also, you know, being an alderman for the past 2.5 years has meant like basically 10 hours a day of Zoom meetings. And on a personal level, I had to sit in a 4-hour Zoom meeting today, and I was ready to pull my eyeballs out. So there, you know, there's personal reasons too. Like James Kappelman, he had a very serious health scare during the pandemic. You know, the pandemic sort of eased. He looked around and said, you know what? I want something different for my life.
I guess.
Heather, how much of it maybe lack of connections that Lori Lightfoot has compared to other past mayors, to private sector and, you know, a different job and stuff like that.
Yeah. So what I will say as a referendum on Lori Lightfoot is that six of her committee chairs have said they're not running for re-election, and that if you have the clout to get a committee chairmanship, and if you're saying, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, that means that your working conditions are subpar, because you've got a really nice budget, you have a lot of authority, you have a lot of ability to get things done. And if the pros are outweighing the cons on that, that means that there's something fundamentally at issue at City Hall.
And Heather, Alderman Spezzato says that he might not run again, and he's projecting that this exodus isn't even over. Do you think that he's right about that, that there are going to be more aldermen stepping aside?
So, you know, I think that Alderman Spezzato should speak for Alderman Spezzato. And, you know, if he's projecting, I'd sure love to borrow his crystal ball if he's got one.
Austin, why were you nodding your head a minute ago?
The committee chairs, I think, is an interesting point. One of the reasons Heather talked about great resignation, that I think that this is happening, is
the mayor used that phrase too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, aldermen and their staffs busy themselves 90%+ of the time with constituent services requests. And at no point were those more ringing off the hook than during COVID for any number of things. And so you became, you know, you had this like glorified, you know, operator like function where your office is just taking calls, calling city, calling the state, calling the federal government. Like it's not a policy making position. It's not a glamorous position. Maybe if that responsibility were to change, we would see a lot more turnover. One thing that I think is very interesting and possibly a reflection on the mayor is how many people are choosing to say they're not running again versus resigning and letting Lightfoot appoint their replacement. And that is a dance that we usually see a lot more, because people can trade that for something. And we have seen some aldermen do that so far, but not all of them, and not even a majority of them who are not running have resigned and are letting Lightfoot pick their replacement. That becomes a really bad dynamic, because you had at one point in Richard M. Daley's tenure around 20 aldermen, I think. So like close to half of the chamber had originally been appointed. That creates all these really terrible dynamics with checks and balances, because you have people who owe their job in the legislative branch to the executive.
So the way these aldermen are resigning is kind of a middle finger to Mayor Lightfoot. They're saying, we're resigning, but we're going to let the voters pick our successor, not you.
That's right. Or I'm going to pick my successor in a lot of cases, because many times it's like their chief of staff or their nephew or their kid or whatever.
Yeah. Heather just had to tap out, and we'll move on to one more topic. Before we talk about the sky, real quick, the Obama portraits. Have you guys seen them?
They are beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Just gorgeous portraits. I was a little confused, because remember when they had the original portraits that they came here to Chicago?
Yep. Yep.
I know there was some controversy around the one that was done of Michelle Obama. So I don't know if this is a redo or if this is always going to be the case, that these are going to be the different White House portraits. But I think having Obama's, in particular, Barack Obama's, with a stark white background is very striking when you compare it to other portraits within the White House. And just the symbolism it's going to mean for so many people. Walking through the White House, you have a Black former president and a Black former first lady. That's going to send a lot of great messages to a lot of kids around the country. And Michelle Obama kind of referenced that in her speech today. That was really good. If you haven't listened to it yet, I recommend you do. It's going to mean a lot just to have that in the White House, a place that was built by Black people. And so often aren't included in the political discussion. To have those two powerful figures right there immortalized forever within those halls, it's really something.
Yeah, let's remember that the reason that the ceremony is taking place now is because Donald Trump was such a child that he could not go along with this ritual that's been going on for generations, where the next president has a ceremony for the previous president's portrait to be on.
Oh, that's right. I mean, this is a little late for that, right? We've skipped a generation here. The Trumps weren't going to accommodate the Obamas. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
Well, they didn't. They pointedly did not do that. And I don't know if the Biden administration is going to do the same to the Trumps. I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him a little turnabout as fair play on that.
Pete just handed me this. It says, then President Joe Biden took office, but before a ceremony could be scheduled, COVID-19 arrived. So the finished portrait, which Ms. Sprung had painted over 9 months after two White House visits with Mrs. Obama, has spent most of the last 6 years hidden in her Brooklyn art studio. How about that? Joining the Rascals now is Shakia Taylor. She is the deputy senior content editor for the Tribune. And you may have read her in Baseball Prospectus, FanGraphics, Victory Journal, Yahoo Sports, MLB.com. One other note about you, she was a recipient of the 2021 Sabre Analytics Conference Research Award for historical baseball analysis and commentary. So you're a baseball geek too, huh?
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. But now you are covering the Chicago Sky, the best team in Chicago, and either on the eve of elimination or the eve of going to the finals. Talk to us just a little bit about the team.
The Sky are, as you said, the best team in Chicago, you know, regardless of gender. And that's one of the things that I really try to, like, get people to see. Like, you know, we get a lot of pushback because it's women's sports. But, I mean, look at how the men's teams are performing right now. You should be all in on the Sky. They have Candace Parker, who is the GOAT. She is a legend, and she's currently, you know, on the court, and even in a bad game, Candace Parker makes an impact. She's making history just about every game now. Last night, even in a blowout loss, she passed Tamika Catchings for two things. So you got Candace, you have Kalia Copper, who will never let you forget that she's from North Philly, which I think Chicagoans find endearing because Chicagoans love Chicago more than anything. She's a superstar in the making. She was finals MVP last year. Then she went on to the EuroLeague to be MVP there. There's just a really good, balanced, you know, group of women on this team. Courtney Vandersloot, Allie Quigley, you know, who has the DePaul connection. Just a phenomenal team from top to bottom.
What have the crowds been like this season? What have the crowds been like for the playoffs?
Well, the Sky, actually, if you look at last season, they didn't really draw big until, you know, the finals. Then Wintrust is packed, it's rocking, people are having a phenomenal time. But this season, they had some carryover. They're averaging more than 7,000 fans a game in the regular season, and Wintrust holds about 10,000 people. The Sky hosted the All-Star game, if you all remember, in July, and it was a near sellout, which shows that there's some interest, not just in the team, but in the W period. They're setting records constantly, you know, for attendance and viewers on TV, and games are getting played on ABC. I think it's great that Chicago is supporting them.
Will the finals be on broadcast TV?
You know what? I just looked at the schedule, and for some reason, I cannot remember. But some of them are on ABC. Some of the games will be on ABC.
Speaking of media stuff, so, like, I won't watch, like, NBA regular season games, usually. Mm-hmm. And same with WNBA. But I will consume enormous amounts of, like, the meme content of the NBA, or like the people on Twitter who are like doing good stuff related to basketball. Who are some of those people for women's basketball?
Oh man, the women's basketball community, first of all, they are really, really, really intense. Like, so there's constant, you know, there's spaces. You have Ari Chambers. She is a big influencer in the WNBA community. Christina Williams. She has a, like a site called Girls Talk Sports TV. She does a lot of the news breaking in the W. She would be like the W's Shams, right? There's a group called The Committee. They hold Twitter spaces and they do like game playbacks and they do their own commentary. It's a really close-knit community. I actually wrote a story on how WNBA fan groups are driving the league more so than the league itself. The community is huge. People fly across the country for games. They make their own merch. Like when they couldn't get jerseys, they started making their own. I would say that they drive what the league does more than people will acknowledge. Like, if the fans in those communities are complaining, the league typically responds.
How do other cities do? Are we the top of the league in terms of fan engagement or attendance?
Chicago is definitely one of the top teams in the league. Obviously, the Seattle Storm with Sue Bird and Breanna Stewart is up there. And then you have the Las Vegas Aces, who are a relatively new team, but Becky Hammon is their coach, and they get a lot of love fan-wise, too. But from last season to this season, we've seen just a significant jump in interest just in the W across the league. The four teams in the playoffs, well, there were four teams in the playoffs, are the teams that are getting the looks right now. It's incredible to be a part of. It's kind of sad that it's taken 26 years for them to actually start gaining momentum. But the popularity cannot be understated. I think it's only going to grow from here.
I was talking with Coach Wade about men being engaged with the game. And he made the note that in all the years he's been coaching for the Sky and GM of the Sky, he's never seen more men actively engaged and actively at the games than he has right now. Would you agree with that assessment from your vantage point?
Absolutely. I've been going to see the Sky since they were playing in Rosemont, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when it would just be a handful of people in there, and they were really mostly like the fall season ticket holders who were looking for something to do. And just from even last year to this year, there are far more men. There are a ton of women, of course, women, young girls, but there are a lot of men. And I think because people are realizing women's basketball is A, more efficient than the men. You have fewer fouls. There's a lot of it happening below the rim. The refs let them play through a lot, sometimes to Chicago fans' detriment. And it's a quick game. It's 40 minutes. So you're in there at 7, you're out at 9. It's efficient. It's effective. It's fun. And it doesn't hurt that the women are attractive, right? Like, I've seen a lot of like guy fans who go, and they are hardcore for the women on the teams. Last season, Stephanie Dolson was a center on the Sky, and she had her own little section of like men who were coming and like chanting her name.
Nothing creepy about that at all.
Look, I mean, we used to have Lexi Brown on the team, and I'm a big Lexi Brown stan, so I get it. Yeah,
I would say it's creepier the non-romantic fandom of men to other sports figures. Like, right. That, like, this is actually more makes more sense somehow.
Yeah.
To me.
So I have a sports question, and that is, what do you think happened to the team on Tuesday night? They just got blown out, and I thought they in games 2 and 3 of this series, I thought they looked really good. You're the expert. You've been watching them all year. What do you think? What happened?
Well, they've had some offensive struggles the entire series. Game 1, they lost, right? But then game 2 and 3, defensively, they were stronger. They were doing a lot of clamping down. They were driving in the paint. And Connecticut is a bigger, more physical team than the Sky. So if Connecticut is pushing the Sky, you know, to the perimeter, which normally it doesn't matter because the Sky have a very like free-flowing, fast-paced offense. They move the ball. Sometimes they pass the ball one extra time and, you know, they were having some issues with shot clock violations, but they're a fast-paced, up-tempo team. And Connecticut was able to slow them down. And they were also able to prevent the Sky from getting in the paint. This game is going to be won in the paint. This is not going to be, you know, we're going to come out and we're going to just shoot threes. We're going to just blow them out that way. It's not going to happen. So last night, I think the Sky relaxed a bit. I think Connecticut also, they had their backs against the wall. They've lost to the Sky over and over again. They lost all four matchups of the regular season. The Sky also are the team that got them out of the playoffs last year. So they have that underdog mentality, like, we got to beat this team because they constantly have our number. And so, you know, Candace Parker even commented, I think it was after game 2, that she would like the Sky to have a better mentality after wins. It's one thing to, you know, come in after a loss and be like, okay, we got to regroup. We got to win this game. It's a whole nother to carry wins from game to game. The Sky have not lost two games back to back this season yet, other than one time.
Wow.
And the two teams that they lost to in the regular season were the Aces and the Storm.
Do the women shoot better?
You have a lot of women in the W who are like 95% shooters. Like, can you imagine?
From the free throw line. Yeah.
Yes, from the free throw line. Like, that means you're making almost all of, like, it is these, I want more people to pay attention. The game is the game, right? You have Allie Quigley. She has won the three-point contest four times. No person of any gender has ever done that before. I don't think there's any woman in the W who is a bad shooter. They may have their shots that, you know, aren't so great, but when they start chucking threes, man, it is amazing.
And what do you like there? Do you like their, if they make it through, do you like their chances in the finals?
Against the Aces? So that was going to be tough because I don't know if any of you watched the Commissioner's Cup this year, but that was like a, it didn't count toward a regular season game, but the Aces, they beat this guy pretty good. And you got Asia Wilson over there. You got, she's the MVP. She's the Defensive Player of the Year. And she plays the entire game. So like her stamina is incredible. I like this guy's chances against the Sun. I'm not too sure about this guy's chances against the Aces because the Aces are young and hungry, and Chelsea Gray is just going to shoot the lights out.
Shake, before you go, Candace Parker, you know, she comes back home, makes such a big impact on this team. She's hinted that she's kind of gone into the season looking at it as her final season, but hasn't really for sure said whether she's going to retire or not yet. If she does, if she calls it quits after this, what is her legacy to you? Is she the GOAT?
Yes. I personally, this is Shakia Taylor, the person, not Shakia Taylor, the writer. I personally adore Candace Parker. I like that Candace Parker holds her own on TNT with, you know, the men. She has an incredible basketball IQ. Even though she makes history repeatedly, she is heavily underrated. Even people in the league underrate her. You know, in fact, she was voted most overrated by, you know, her peers.
Ouch.
what's that all about?
Candace Parker overrated? That's
yeah,
crazy.
She was voted most overrated. I think some of that is, you know,
jealousy.
Yep, I didn't want to say it. Thank you. I think some of it, you know, is a little jealousy, is a little hate. Her teammates have her back. We talked to them about it. I wrote on, you know, the disrespect of Candace Parker, how this season has kind of felt like her revenge tour of sorts because she's coming out and she's hanging and banging. And, like, that's exactly the performance that they need from her. She also is a leader. I talk to young players and they talk about how Candace Parker is giving financial advice, right? Like, you need a credit card. You need to do this, though, with your credit card. Be smart with your money. And so I don't really hear that from anywhere else of, like, veterans on the team helping the young ones come in. And because we, you know, we've heard about the salary issues in the league. So for someone of Candace Parker's stature to tell you how to save your money, how to help build your brand, it's invaluable.
How much do those players make, Shakia? How much do they earn?
It's not a lot, and that we all probably make more. Because they're making like minor league salaries.
And some people find there to be this sort of sexist stripe through women's sports versus men's sports. But the counter argument, of course, is men's sports draw more fans and generate more money. Is it fair, the treatment that the women get, would you say, in terms of salary or for that matter, our attention, right? They're the least appreciated but best team in the city of Chicago. It's a women's team. Is that fair as fair, or is there something else going on here? Do you have something to say about that?
I think it's about investment. I think people invest in men's sports, right? Like, look at the number of advertisers that you see in a men's game. Look at the number of brands simply involved in the men's game. Whereas the women's game is just now gaining momentum and the interest of advertisers. So part of it, it's not that the women aren't worth watching. It's that people are not investing in the talent on the court because they don't believe that people like you and I want to watch it. So it kind of works both ways. I do think they deserve more money. The reason why they play overseas is because they're not making enough money here to survive. You know, it was a big deal with Brittany Griner. She wouldn't have been in Russia if she was paid properly in the United States. Like, we could talk about everything else another time, but that's a big deal. Like, that pay issue, it's going to stay there. And the strain on their bodies, right? Like, you're playing in the U.S. for a few months, and it's a very short season, and it's very quick. And you're flying commercial because no one is investing in this team. So they're on the plane with you and I, but they're playing 40 minutes, and they got to work out, and they got practice, and they got, you know, all this other stuff. And I don't think we think about the fact that these are also, some of them are mothers, right? So you have moms who are putting an extra strain on their body, whereas men don't have babies in the NBA, right? Like, there's no player where we're like, he's going on paternity leave to have a child. There's a lot of discrimination that's happening, and I don't think it's fair.
One thing I feel like people are surprised to know when I tell them this is this whole thing of the max salary. So, like, you can be the best player in the league and your max salary is $215,000, and I don't know of another sport where that's the case. It's like, salary cap is a thing, right? Like, teams can't spend over X amount or they gotta pay a penalty. But that's one thing I still don't understand at all. Like, what is, and that was bargained for, I think, too, like, collectively bargained for. What's the story behind that?
So I think what needs to happen across sports is there needs to be a salary floor, right? As opposed to a salary cap, there needs to be a salary floor, whereas no person can make below this specific amount. And then we start getting into, like, livable wage. We start talking about, like, values of players. Just today, Gabby Williams is a WNBA player, and she said, like, teams aren't prioritizing signing her, but she's making more money elsewhere. So we also have to consider that these salary issues are causing us to lose talent. I mean, it's like with any business, right? Like, if you can't afford to pay people, then you're going to lose talent. You're going to start hemorrhaging talent. So I also think that the WNBA needs to create frenzy with regard to free agency. I think that would also drum up interest, and it would also then help with the salary issue, right? Yeah. Where people who are switching teams, it's not so quiet. For example, Breanna Stewart, this is supposed to be her last season in Seattle. She should be a huge free agent. There should be tons of stuff about this. It should be a big deal, but it's not, because we know that she's going to go to a team, or maybe she'll stay there, and she'll make less than the average, you know, high-paid attorney makes. How does that even work?
Moderately paid attorney. I mean, and it sounds like there's a limited pool of money, so as to ensure that at least the lesser-known players or lesser-talent players get some of it, you've got to put a cap on the individuals, which at least would distribute more money and give at least a decent wage to the rest of the team. But it would help if, like you said, companies or we as a society invested more in the WNBA, there would be more money for these women. The league would elevate that way.
Absolutely.
By the way, we just looked it up. Producer Pete just handed me that in the finals, the first game is on ABC Sunday at 2:00 in Chicago. And then the other six games, should it go seven, would be on ESPN. We got to win one more game to get there, though. And Shakia, it's nice to meet you, and we'll continue to read you and invite you back down the road.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I want to add, I think that your coverage has been terrific, and I hope that the Tribune commits to more coverage of the Sky all next season. It's been a pleasure to read what you've been saying.
Thank you. Appreciate that a lot.
Thanks a lot, Thanks. Shake.
Brenda's on like a one syllable friendship with her. Austin, good luck on the wedding. Are we going to see you next week? Will you be able to join us?
Yeah, I think I'll see you guys next week. Yeah.
Okay. And Heather's not going to be invited to your wedding. Is that correct?
Man.
Wow. What was that all about?
I got totally
Holy
wrecked.
Cow. I'm like, he's sitting right there. All right, man. We'll see you later.
All right. Later, guys.
One more topic for you two boys. Darren Bailey is continuing his run for governor against Lori Lightfoot. After another crimey weekend in the nation's third largest city, everything that he seems to be critical about is the crime in the city and the condition of the city of Chicago. It's like he's running against Lori Lightfoot, but it's J.B. Pritzker's name who will be next to his. He also said if he were governor, this pro-life legislator would restore the death penalty. One other note about Darren Bailey, there was a lengthy and I think fair and fascinating portrait of Bailey in last Sunday's Tribune by Rick Pearson, where he described Bailey's faith, how it informs his views, how it informs his wife's views, the school they run, which was interesting.
The beef he has against Pritzker is the Safety Act, which is going to get rid of cash bail for nonviolent offenses. And this is something that Bailey thinks is going to lead to great increases in crime. He also says he wants to make it so that people can't file anonymous complaints against police officers. That this is anti-police if you allow anonymous complaints. Now, citizens often don't want to put their name onto complaints. They want incidences investigated, but they don't want their names and addresses and revealed to the officers who they are complaining about. And I understand that. I think there's a value when you have someone who's as powerful as a police officer to being able to file a complaint and deal with a factual complaint without having to put your name on it. Anyway, things like that. So, but basically, yeah, you're right. He's running against Kim Fox, Lori Lightfoot, and Tom Dart as though he's running for sheriff of Illinois. I just don't think it's going to work. Not in Illinois, not in 2022, not with everything that's going on nationally with the Republican Party. I don't see it as a winning issue. I don't see him as going to come even close to Pritzker. I'm saying he's going to lose by 15 to 20 points.
John, I love the way you laid it out. He's running against Lightfoot, a governor campaign against Lightfoot. I mean, that's exactly what's happening here. And I agree with Eric. It's not going to work. While it's going, it fires up people outside of Chicago for sure. Like early outside of Illinois, it fires up the national, you know, conversation around Darren Bailey. It fires up the Fox News crowd. But when you look at it brass tacks and just look at where the votes are going to be, he still hasn't spent any real money of his own campaign in Chicago advertising. You need that media market. You need to start getting your message out there. We're not too far away from the election itself. I'm with Eric. It's going to be 15 to 20 points. It might be more than that. It could be 30, depending on how this plays out. But this is not the way to go, especially you're talking about the death penalty for non-violent offenders. Your issue is Chicago violence, and you're targeting non-violent offenders.
I don't think he wants the death penalty for nonviolent offenders. That's a bit much.
I think he does.
He was behind a measure to reinstate the death penalty for those convicted of killing police officers. And it's important to remember the reason we don't have the death penalty in Illinois is because of the legal and journalistic efforts over the years that demonstrated that the state cannot be trusted to make decisions about life and death in this manner, because we have an error-prone system, and it's not worth the risk of committing errors, putting someone to death. That's why we don't have a death penalty. It's not that the majority of people feel like, oh, it's not right that John Gacy was killed. That's not what this is about. It's not right. You know, we know that people commit horrible crimes, and we know people are seriously and incontrovertibly guilty of those crimes, but we still don't want to give the system itself the power to kill people. And so far, there's no evidence I've ever seen that shows that places that have the death penalty have lower murder rates or are any safer than places that do have it. I don't think that's an issue that people are going to be all excited about.
I would like to see him come into the city or the suburbs, do a tour. Maybe he has, I don't know, make himself more accessible to the people. If you want to take pot shots, it wasn't Rockford. It wasn't Rock Island. It was some rock city west in the far northwest part of the state where he was this past weekend and made some more disparaging remarks about Chicago and the crime. I want him to make those statements in Bolingbrook. I want him to make those statements downtown. You know, that's where the people are. I don't understand why he continues to stay in this comfortable southern and central Illinois area when all the votes are north of I-80. So come on up here, face the fire. You might get booed. I don't know if someone's going to throw a tomato at you. Maybe they'll pat you on the back. But come on, let's go. Show
you
up.
You may even find some agreement.
Yeah.
I mean, if you come to Chicago, you never know. Yeah. There are people that are very dissatisfied with the way things are going in Chicago. You want to talk about violence? There's many people who are fed up with that. So why it just makes too much sense to come here and talk about it, right?
Yeah, he'll get 15-20% of the vote in Chicago. I mean, the Republican, even the most rascally Republican, is going to get that in Chicago. John, is he still not coming on the air with you?
No. And I don't know when the last time was that Pete reached out, but we do it regularly. I would say 2 or 3 times a week we invite him on. Mostly they don't even respond to our overtures. And the times we've been picking are where he said something that I think he could easily sell, you know, where it's like, hey, you got a point there, Darren. Maybe we should do this or that or this or that. He's acting like he really doesn't care if he wins. Almost as if he doesn't want to win. This mantra that Chicago's a hellhole and everything is Lori Lightfoot's fault, so let's get rid of J.B. Pritzker. It makes so little sense. It seems so scattershot to me that you just wonder, what is his objective? Maybe it's something else. Adam Kinzinger, you sometimes wonder what Adam Kinzinger's up to. Like, so what's your end game here? What are you trying to do? And you don't know. Are you going to run for president? Do you want state office someday? But you certainly have a platform and you're making some points. What am I going to do with that? And I don't exactly understand what Darren Bailey's end game is here. It seems designed to not win in a blue state.
Well, the talk about Bailey is that he, for all his faults, that he remains true to himself,
yeah,
that he's not going to be one of these candidates who campaigns hard to the right in the primary and then tacks to the middle during the general election, that he's someone who would consider that to be hypocritical, and that he's going to stay true to his roots, and his roots are on the far right, and his base is on the far right, and I give him some credit for that, just like he is who he is. And he won the primary being who he is, and he's going to run that way now in the general election, even though I'm sure people all around him are doing face palms all the time. His staff, his advisors are going, you know, Darren, knock it off with the hellhole stuff, for goodness sake. This is not getting us votes where we're going to need them in order to beat Pritzker. And
So why did he run, Eric? Then why did he run?
Maybe he wants to get a Fox News pundit job or something. I'm mystified by it, John. I am too, because this is not a, I feel like any political strategist would say this is not a winning strategy by any means. So yeah.
And what's the debate situation right now? I had heard that they're going to debate now for sure, because there was a time when it looked like Pritzker wasn't going to do it, and then Bailey wasn't going to do it.
One's going to be on WMBD TV in Peoria, right? And one was going to be on WGN TV in Chicago. That was the last I heard. That there were going to be two. Do you think I'm old? That's old news, Eric?
I don't know. I haven't been following it that carefully. I haven't seen the reports on it. But I would really like to see him in prime time go up against Pritzker. I'd like to hear what he has to say. Pritzker is good in those situations.
Oh, yeah.
Pritzker is a good speaker, is a good debater. It might be that he'll decide not to do it, or it might be that Pritzker will say, I'm so far ahead, I'm not going to risk a gaffe by giving him the free airtime. So I don't know. It would be interesting to see.
Boy, I hope he doesn't do that, because I think that Pritzker has the same obligation that I'm describing for Bailey to come and face whatever fires out there. You got to stand before your detractor and let us take a measure of the two of you. Right, Brandon?
The voters deserve that. Absolutely. I'm always in favor of both sitting down and having a debate, because you don't want to discount any vote at all. And if you stand back and say, I'm just not going to do it, that's exactly what you're doing.
The Mar-a-Lago seizure of still more documents from Donald Trump, the president is going to get his special master to review these documents, which seems a little redundant since the Justice Department has essentially completed a review of them. But a judge who he appointed has said no, that the consequences are so monumental and this is such a one-off. If for no other reason, for the appearance of fairness, we should appoint a special master to go through those things. Eric, what's your take on that? Were you surprised that a special master isn't? And by the way, we don't know who the special master is going to be yet. If it's Rudy Giuliani or Eric Trump, I'm out of here.
Well, there's a lot of thought that this decision by Judge Cannon was kooky. That a lot of legal experts you talk to say that it's not connected to the law, that it has no legal rationale, that it's bad, and that the Justice Department would have a great case if they appealed it. I don't think that optically that would be a great idea necessarily, because this everything else I've read about it also says that this doesn't really hurt the government in the long run.
It delays it some,
and I'm not sure. And maybe what it's going to do, maybe what Trump is hoping is that it'll delay it to the point where he is then an announced candidate for president, and he can say this is all political, and we don't want this. This is just Biden going after his political rival. He's already saying that, so it doesn't really matter, but it might have a little bit more salience if he's actually a declared candidate. But even still, I mean, what I've read about this, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but the special master was just not called for. There's no reason for it. It's not what special masters are usually used for. And that this judge made this decision based on the politics of the situation, not necessarily liberal conservative politics, but sort of taking into account public reaction and what people are saying about this, which is not how judges are supposed to react. So I'm disappointed in this. I'm hoping the Justice Department appeals it, but I don't think it's a fatal mistake when you're talking about the cause of getting Trump indicted one day for the way he handled these classified documents.
I wondered if the timing was worse for Trump the longer this is delayed, because then it gets closer to the election. So the controversy, the clutter of it all would be closer to the election, and it would be better if he got this resolved and then moved on, as long as he wasn't in jail. And you can run from jail anyway.
According to the Washington Post, you know, if you're going to rail against Hillary Clinton for making the mistake she did with the email server, this is up there with that. With classified information, and if it gets into the wrong hands, Mar-a-Lago security probably isn't as steep as
nuclear server
security. Right, exactly. So, I mean, hey, I really don't think he's running in 2024.
Oh, you want to make? Hold on one second. Hey, Eric, should I bet him money on that? I don't bet money with people. Yes. Okay.
Put that house in Ottawa, you have.
Okay, I've got a little farmhouse in Ottawa. I'll bet you that. I don't know if I want to put the farmhouse on that, Eric. I'll bet you five. How about $5, Brandon? $5.
$5. I can do $5.
Let's do $1.75. $1.75.
We keep lowering it. So we can do $1.75.
Well, that's
we've gone from your farmhouse to $5 to $1.75.
Yes,
$1.75. Man, you can get a cup of coffee at Starbucks for $1.75.
That's true.
And as his advisor, I'm going to have to split that debt to you, Brandon, if we lose it. So, well, secretly, I think the Republican Party is aghast at Donald Trump, but I think that publicly they realize that going up against him is politically dangerous, and so a lot of people are voicing support for him and playing nice with his theory that the election was stolen from him, when in fact they realize that it's nonsense and that he is probably going to be the architect of. I'm predicting, and I'll bet $1.80 that the Republicans are going to lose the Senate. And they're not going to. It's pretty clear they're not going to do nearly as well in the House as they hoped they would, as it looked like earlier in the year that they would. Part of it is the Dobbs decision on abortion.
Sure.
And I think part of it is just this craziness from Trump and Mar-a-Lago and the MAGA Republicans. I liked President Biden's speech about that the other day.
Did you like the lighting as well?
It was very nice.
It was red. It looked horrific. When I saw that, I thought, this is a Fox meme. They really lit it and staged it that way. It looked spooky.
I think it was a mistake to do it outside the White House. It looked too much like a campaign speech, honestly.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah, but everyone is complaining about that, or the same people complaining about that are the people who went to the White House lawn for the Republican convention last year. So or in 2020. So I'm not taking that complaint all that seriously. But he shouldn't have had Marines in the background. I mean, there was some stagecraft issues, but I thought that what he said about the threat that MAGA Republicans, and he was very clear, it was MAGA Republicans, not every Republican, but that MAGA Republicans pose to democracy itself, is real and it's urgent, and we have to do something about it. We have to fight it. And I'm of the opinion that although Trump and Trumpism are similar, that without Trump, I'm not sure how far Trumpism is going to go. That if Trump does decide not to run, that Trumpism will not be mm-hmm. as strong as maybe we think it is. There is a yearning in the part of a majority of people in this country to get back to sort of normal politics, where we're not hating each other quite as virulently as we are hating each other now. So I think that Trump is he's not the only cause of all this stuff, but without him, I think the temperature cools significantly.
I'm of the opposite belief. I believe that Trump, the candidate, the appetite for him is done, or at least dying, whereas Trumpism is going to stay around. And part of me believes that because Trumpism has existed really before Trump. What Trumpism now is just like an evolved state of what the Tea Party was doing and the birtherism and all that type of stuff. And if you want to even get deeper with it, it's an evolved state of just like, you know, racist dog whistle politics we've seen for years and years. So I think Trumpism is always going to be there. I think it's just going to inflame candidates who are smarter and more strategic than Trump, like a Ron DeSantis and people like that, who may not want to openly say that they were part of the Trump wing and inspired by Trump, but that was the move.
That aligns itself with the notion that Trump isn't the cause of all of this. He's the symptom of all of this. All of this was there, and that's how you got Donald Trump. He didn't suddenly, you know, hypnotize people into all of these ugly or cockamamie beliefs. So maybe you're onto something there. Out of time. We've been losing them left and right. Heather had to tap out earlier. It was nice to meet Shakia. And Austin had to tap out, too. He's got evidently a paying gig somewhere. So, Brandon and Eric, it's nice to have the two of you on the Mincing Rascals podcast as well today.
Hey, always great to see you guys. It really is.
Yeah, thanks. And good to see you again, Brandon.
Absolutely. Go Buckeyes, Eric.
I said that all weekend, and I don't know if I can ever say it again.
But. Wait a minute. Ohio State beat Notre Dame. Now, who do you guys play? Who does Michigan and who do Ohio State play this weekend?
Well, Michigan's playing Hawaii, which is one of the worst teams in college football. I like their chances quite a bit.
Although, you remember when Appalachia State beat Michigan and the world stopped spinning on its axis?
I have forgotten all about that. I have no memory of that. I don't think it actually happened.
Burned in my memory forever. The Buckeyes play Arkansas State, I believe.
I've heard of them.
Yeah,
those are not going to be pretty games for the opponents. But Brandon and I will continue to be friendly until the end of the year, end of the season. In which case, we will be a don't invite them item.
All bets will be off. We're produced also by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I know nothing about football. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week. Okay, boys.
All right, John. Thanks.
See you, Brandon. Thank you, guys. Later. Take care. Bye.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.